It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour.
Hi, I'm Mia, the grown-out pixie cut mullet your mother warned you about.
And I'm Maggie, the gay crab from Moana that sings shiny. Welcome to the Bitching Hour. So this episode, we're going to start by being the little bitches that we are and dishing it out on what's grinding our gears. Our main brew this week is about intergenerational queer love. We all know that you watched Call Me By Your Name, so don't try to pretend that you didn't. Finally, we'll wrap up with a cutthroat game of personalized What Would You Rather. Let's get started.
Maggie, what's grinding your gears?
What is grinding my gears? What do I need to bitch it out about? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what I need to bitch it out about. Basically, people are not giving Hayley Kiyoko the credit that she deserves. People are, like, not giving queer women the credit that they deserve, but particularly lesbian Jesus, Hayley Kiyoko.
God, she's so hot.
And
we need to have an episode about Hayley Kiyoko.
Just her.
I once made a playlist where I was like, I'm going to put a bunch of queer pop songs on this. Do you know what the playlist was?
What?
Her album. That was it.
Well, don't get me... Okay, I'm losing my fire on this. Okay.
No, get... Yeah, sorry. Beefed up. Get mad.
So, on the friggin' internet, I saw two different tweets this week. The first one was somebody tweeted... It was like the Advocate magazine or something. Tweeted at Katy Perry, at Lady Gaga, at Kesha. Like, where is the golden era of gay pop? Like, when are these pop stars gonna make it gay again? And I'm like, okay, for starters... I think only Lady Gaga identifies as queer at all out of those people.
Bye, so, Katy, like, Perry. Bye-bye.
So, like, shut the fuck up, for one. And also, like, there are shit tons of queer women doing amazing pop that is totally queer, and you're just not paying attention to it because you're talking about white straight women appealing to white gay men.
Right.
Bye.
Right.
Bye.
That's its own thing.
Secondly, I saw a friggin' tweet today that was like, here's why Harry Styles is an icon for queer women. And I get it because, like, James Dean is, like, a lesbian icon, and, like, I totally understand the whole vibe. I get it.
D-E-A-N.
I don't get it.
There's an awful porn star named James Dean. D-E-A-N.
No.
But we're talking about D-E-A-N.
Are people really gonna hear that?
No.
And think, like, okay.
I don't think they will. Because no one thinks that James D-E-N is a...
What are you doing?
Nancy's doing a fingering gesture.
Okay. Well, anyways.
She did a scissoring gesture like this. That's four legs per person.
We got eight... never scissored before?
I've never scissored with eight legs.
You missing out. Get your spider on. Anyways, yeah, they were saying that Harry Styles is a lesbian icon, and no, he's not a fucking lesbian icon. He, like, very casually might have alluded to being bisexual. That's awesome. I love that. I'm here for it. But, like, that does not a lesbian icon make. Hayley Kiyoko is a lesbian icon.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Here's my little bitch. It's really about a time that I was kind of a little bitch and someone called me on it. But honestly, she was kind of a little bitch. Let's set the scene. I was at Northampton Pride. This was last year, so it was, I think it's in, like, April. It's really early.
Or May. And, I think it's in May.
Yeah. So, anyway, a lot of people, especially just, like, allies who are, like, my mom would say, crunchy granola families from Western Mass, mm-hmm. come through with their dogs to the parade as if it's just, like, a fucking block party. And, which I get, yeah, sure, come, like, I don't know, hang
small
out.
Small town prides are super sweet until they're not, but
yes.
It's really sweet. Yeah.
So there I was, drunk at 2 p.m. with glitter on my face, looking at all of my exes making out with each other. And I exclaimed, so a lot of people come through with their dogs, and I looked around and I said to my friend Kate, wow, I cannot believe all of these dogs are gay. And a woman turned, she did, like, this slow turn. She said, what did you just say? And I have not been scolded like that. And so, like, I looked like the principal just, like, called my name.
Wait, what was she mad about?
I guess that I was saying her dog was gay. Maybe she was a homophobe. Maybe she just came to see, like, what the scene was so she could infiltrate from within.
Also, like, or is that, like, you're not allowed to make any jokes about gay stuff?
Right, maybe because she thought I was an ally.
Just a really strong ally.
Yeah, just a really strong, just like a normal best friend. Just like normal. Anyways, I honestly don't regret it at all. All those dogs were gay. Because they all have, like, the rainbow handkerchiefs.
Oh, yeah, they were gay.
They're gay.
I'm sorry, any dog.
They're doing the hanky coding? Come on.
I'll just say it all the way. All dogs are gay.
All dogs are.
Your dog is gay.
A dag.
All dogs are gay. A dag.
Thank you for listening to Little Bitch.
All right.
Oh, are we getting into the main brew?
It's time to get into the main brew.
So, we are talking about intergenerational love, particularly queer intergenerational love, because this is a gay podcast.
So, we all know that Call Me By Your Name was on everybody's mind this season, and it has really been kind of blowing up the discussion about Elio and Oliver and their age difference, because Elio is 17, for those of you who
Elio
have not seen it.
Elio is a frozen pizza brand.
Elio is 17, and Oliver is 24. So we have a couple questions. We have a couple things that we want to talk about and talk through.
Yeah. So I think the first thing that I want to say is that when I saw Call Me By Your Name, my problem immediately wasn't the age difference, but that they just don't seem compatible as a couple. I was like, these two people would never hook up.
Did you read it?
The book? No.
I really like the book because...
If you were to have cast the characters, would you have cast Armand Hammer as that role?
Would I have cast Baking Soda?
Yes. Sorry, Army.
I think it's so the book and the movie are very different. And I really, the book had a lot of things that were like a ginormous friggin' eye roll about it. But I really did like the book, kind of like minus those super cliche points. But the movie was so different. Like, there were so many different choices made, and it's so, like, the whole book is Elio's inner stream of consciousness. Like, actually, like, I read the book, and I was like, oh my god, I can't believe that this is a movie. Like, somebody read this and thought, wow, I'm gonna adapt this to a screenplay.
Yeah.
Which explains why there's relatively little dialogue in Call Me By Your Name, the film. So, I don't know, it's almost, to me, it's almost kind of separate. Like, I wouldn't have cast Armie Hammer, but I wouldn't have... I probably wouldn't have picked this. I wouldn't have written it. I wouldn't have done any of this. I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I liked it. But, like, I wouldn't have done any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, one of the things that people have come back to really quickly, like, what I've seen is the first argument about their age difference is, well, blah, 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 about the age of consent in Italy. Well, the age of consent is this and the age of consent is that. And in some states it's this and in some states it's that. And then people rebut it by saying, okay, well, the age of consent doesn't really mean anything. And, like, you, like, that's icky to, like, rely only on the, like, legal number of, like, oh, you know, he's barely 17. Does that count? And so one of the questions that that makes me think of and has kind of, I think it's really double-edged is, first off, do teenagers / young adults, so, like, I'm really thinking, like, 15 to 20, which is a huge span if you think about it. Like,
right, for life experience.
100%, and it's very different for different people. Like, some 16-year-olds and some 20-year-olds have more in common than two 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
But also, so, like, do they have the ability to give consent? Do people in that, do they have, like, the ability to fully 100% give consent? Because Elio pursues it, he wants it, he's into it. Like, is he able to give his consent given his age and their power difference? But then, on the other hand, is it incredibly disrespectful if you say, oh, they don't have the ability to give full consent? Is that disrespectful to say that you're not capable of doing this? Or is it, like, not taking them seriously?
Right. Well, because also there is a lot to be said about just the impulsivity of people in their late teens, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rational thinking that I do now that I just could not do at that age. And I don't like to generalize, but personally, I'll speak from personal experience. Like, the people that I dated, the people I spent my time with, the people I hooked up with or was interested in, I'm like, what? You know, like, I'm just like, I would never make that choice because I just can think through the next step at this point in my life and be like, no, that person's just going to treat you like shit. Or that person's mm-hmm. just going to be like, it's, you know, you can kind of see through people a little bit more the older that you get. Mm-hmm. Because also you have to take people at their word. Mm-hmm. Like if we're saying that people ages 15 to 20, that their sexual identity mm-hmm. is as they say it is, then shouldn't their, you know, the things that they want out of sexual relationships be given that same kind of value and validity?
Mm-hmm. I think what is so inherently queer about the whole discussion and why I like that it's happening around something like Call Me By Your Name, as opposed to, it's not that this hasn't happened with straight relationships, but it's almost, we don't talk about it the same way. But what are we defining as sex? Like, because right. we have, like, it seems like kind of a no-brainer that, like, if a 12-year-old or 13-year-old says, like, I am gay, that's who I am, and then they, like, want to make out with another gay 12 or 14-year-old even, no one, like, blinks an eye, whatever. Mm-hmm. But what kind of things are we talking about? Like, what kind of exploration is appropriate for people? And, like, what and how do power imbalances factor into mm-hmm. it? You know, it's not just age.
Right.
That's something we talked about, too, is that it's, you know, he's, Oliver is a graduate student and Elio is a high schooler.
Right. Right. And it's also like, we also need to fucking protect people, you know? You know, especially in queer communities. I mean, not especially in queer communities, but I feel like often in queer communities, there's kind of, I mean, we talked about this last week. There's kind of this pressure to gain experience, to mm-hmm. validate to yourself or to others your queerness. And oftentimes that's done through sexual exploration. So there's also, I think, to me, the worry of like, you know, consent, but also the reason behind the consent.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not, I completely agree with that. And I also think that like I'm, when I'm saying these things, I don't mean it to be like, oh, none of this made me feel icky at all. And I'm totally fine with it.
Totally.
But I will also say like on to kind of complicate that a little bit, as a 24-year-old now, I could be having sex with someone or like kind of like getting myself into romantic or sexual situations where like, my reason for doing so is not particularly transparent, or I'm not always being true to myself or true to the other people around me, or mm-hmm. like I'm not really in a place to give consent emotionally, but I do it anyways. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's really complicated. And I think one thing I think that is really interesting is that we often hear that it's very different in gay communities. Like everybody says, oh, it's different. Yeah. For gay people, it's just really different because, you know, for a multitude of reasons, like maybe there weren't that many gay people around you. And so it just so happens that like there was an older gay person who kind of showed you the way, but also showed you the way sexually, among many other things. But I think for me, I always see those conversations happen in a gay male mm-hmm. light. They very Same. Rarely happen in queer women contexts.
Yeah, totally. And what I was thinking about earlier with this was that I feel like oftentimes in queer relationships, there's more of an ambiguous intimacy where things may start out as, you know, a really intimate friendship, may progress to romantic, maybe the opposite, etc. But I feel like often in queer relationships, even with people my own age, there's kind of this learning about self-identity and self-awareness that I get from those kinds of relationships, which I think are why the first several times I dated women, I had existential crises of just being like, oh my God, this is like the deepest intimacy I've ever known, because I was learning so much about myself and about how I identified and what it felt like to identify that way. But I also feel like we sometimes excuse or don't acknowledge the dark and shitty things that happen in queer relationships because we're like, well, this is sometimes the only person that's available or the only option mm-hmm. I had or the only, you know, where it's like, mm-hmm. you're trying to figure shit out. And I think that this is just as valid to kind of critique both sides of like, mm-hmm. well, is it fucked up to say that that's fucked up? But is it fucked up to not speak out mm-hmm. when there's a clear power differential in a relationship? And also like, I'm curious about, I mean, I don't totally know how I feel about this. Is there ever an opportunity in which power dynamics in relationships exist in a way that could not be problematic? Mm. You know what I'm saying? And one thing that this has made me think about, which I didn't actually bring up to you before we started recording, is that I didn't think about, and I wanted to talk about this last week and forgot, but it's really appropriate now, I think, is to talk about the November rule. So the November rule at Mount Holyoke is a rule that upper class people are not allowed to hook up with or date first semester, first years. And my
hypothetically until quote unquote Thanksgiving break, which is why it's called the November rule. But
yeah. And yeah. And your main reaction may be that that's icky and weird.
To put a rule on it or to hook up with a first year?
Both.
Got it.
But I think the one thing that the lighthearted thing that I think is really funny is that rumor that I've heard, myth that I've heard surrounding it, is that the reason it's after November break is because people need to go home and break up with their boyfriends so they can come back and be gay.
Oh my God.
Which I think is very funny. But I think that the November rule raises a lot of these similar questions for me of commenting about someone else's ability to make decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the November rule is intended to allow people time to adjust to college and make their own friends and develop their own relationships and kind of, you know, this may be the first time that they're in a primarily queer, no, maybe not primarily queer, that they're in a space that has so much queerness
mm-hmm.
front and center.
Mm-hmm.
It raises a lot of
definitely
questions.
Definitely a primarily queer social scene.
Yeah. A space that emphasizes queerness in this way or, you know, you're hearing sexual identification that you've never heard before or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways I think it's appropriate to allow people that time. But I also think like, who the fuck am I to decide for somebody else? Because everyone is so different.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that it's intended, I think, to dissuade predatory behavior mm-hmm. on the part of upper class people, but oftentimes makes that predatory behavior more visible because then it's like, oh, I can't wait for the November. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you and I were talking about this.
Like, oh, I'm like fall. Totally going to get her after the November rule's over, which is disgusting.
Right. It becomes like, really predatory and yeah. it becomes
objectifying.
Yeah. It becomes, but it also becomes taboo.
Right.
I think,
right.
which is part of this whole conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's the same kind of walking that line of, you have to stand up for younger queer people. You have to stand mm-hmm. up for people who are just adjusting to Mount Holyoke, which is a weird place.
Mm-hmm.
And well, dating there is
going to college
weird.
Is weird. You right. know, like first semester so college much, is just that way.
So much yeah. to adjust to. But then you also have to say like, well, someone who's a first semester first year may be 25.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may be 19 and just have a lot of dating experience
mm-hmm.
previously. Or may not and may be ready. You know, like who are you to say for somebody else
mm-hmm.
what they're capable of. And the mm-hmm. weird thing about the November rule is that people are very, very vocal to couples who break it. You know, if you are dating someone, if you are holding hands with somebody, you become immediately very visible as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And people will be like, oh, yeah, yeah, you're not supposed to, you know, you guys aren't supposed to be together, like strangers yeah. and stuff, you know? And
people comment on it. I think it's so interesting that you said, I love that you said taboo because I hadn't really, like, put, at like, that point, I don't really think I'd put my finger on yet. Which is to say, so much of queerness is about taboos. And I, like, I'm thinking back to Call Me By Your Name and, like, the, like, that movie felt, like, so delicious because it was, like, yes, it was, like, in the Italian, like, lush countryside and everything was just so slow and sticky and, like, whatever. But also, like, there's something about taboos which are, like, kind of delicious, you know?
Right, right.
And, but it's, like, at whose expense? What is it costing people? And I think that's something that, like, I really liked about the film is that in the end, when you see Elio crying in front of the fireplace, you can see that it really cost him something. And it's not that it didn't cost Oliver anything, obviously, right. but it cost Elio something different. And I really like that because I think at the end of the day, it's not really for me to say, like, oh, everybody should follow this rule or everybody should follow that rule. And, like, particularly around these, like, these things that are that line of adult, of coming into adulthood, that those, like, those not the more cut and dry. Like, I don't think 13-year-olds should be dating 24-year-olds. I'm pretty confident in that. I don't really have to, like,
right.
I don't really need to think about it that much.
Right, but some, like, of it you have to tease out.
And
it.
So
it's complicated.
But I really, these things are going to happen. Like, they're going to keep happening. They've been happening. They happen, particularly they happen to straight girls all the time, but mm-hmm. they happen in queer relationships too. And they happen, they're going to keep happening. So if we're not realistic about, like, how these power dynamics work, then I think not talking about it or, like, not engaging with it hurts, is not protecting queer youth more than anything.
Right. And I think you reminded me of our reaction to the end of the movie when you bring up that scene and talk mm-hmm. about, like, what did it cost. At the end of the movie, So also Maggie and I went to see this movie together. We spent the whole train ride there talking about queerness. We went to the movie. We got there right as it was starting. So we had to sit in the very front row. Mm-hmm. And we got up after the movie ended. And we're putting on our all our fucking layers because it's Boston in January or February.
Oh, my God.
And I remember just being like, I'm going back in the closet. I remember saying that. And we were just like huffing and puffing. Like, we never get a good ending. We never get a happy ending. Mm-hmm. You know, like... There's, like, so many queer movies are just fucking tragic.
And I was so... I remember being flabbergasted after this film because I, like, read something online that was, like, something that's so revolutionary about Call Me By Your Name is that it's not a tragedy. And I was like, it's not a tragedy. Ooh. Like, their hearts are broken. Like, well, what yeah, do you mean for, it's not a tragedy?
For who?
Yeah. But then I was like, okay, it's true. Like, they didn't die.
Right.
And they didn't, like, get beaten.
Right.
You know, like...
Change of pace. Like, yeah. And this makes me think about another film, another queer film mm-hmm. featuring intergenerational love that I wanted to bring in, which I saw for the first time with Maggie recently for a Christmas party called A Christmas Carol. So the film Carol really fucked me up. That might be all I have to say about that. But I think it's important to raise also an example of queer women mm-hmm. in this same kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. And how if Oliver had had the same kind of swagger and confidence and, like, power moves mm-hmm. that Carol does, mm-hmm. would we have thought that was icky?
That is so interesting. I bet we would have.
You know?
I bet I would
Carol,
have.
Carol, like, she slathers on the, like, power moves.
And it's true that in what's Rooney Mara's... characters. I don't care. I don't remember. Therese.
Yeah, Therese.
Therese is in her mid-20s, so it's obviously a little bit different. But I think actually what Call Me By Your Name has made me think of is, what's it called with the French one? Blue is the Warmest Color.
Mm.
Did you see that?
Yes.
That movie is actually about a 15-year-old and a 25-year-old. Yeah. She's 15 in that movie, and no one said shit about it. Like, mm-hmm. it was not blowing up Twitter. It was not all over the internet. And it's so...
I didn't know that, actually, even.
Yeah, it's like... And they talk about it in the film. She's, like, not... She's super young, but it's so interesting, like, how... What we give passes to and, like, how...
Well, also, that movie was a lot less famous.
That's true, it was. Although it got pretty... I mean, it was pretty... It made it to the Oscars and stuff, right?
Did it? I don't know.
I don't know.
But it was... I never saw it in theaters.
Oh.
I saw it on Netflix. You know, after the way after the fact, mm-hmm. I think. Anyway, I'm usually late to movies. But you know, Call Me By Your Name was such a spotlight mm-hmm. movie.
But I think what's interesting is that we, like, one thing that I really liked about Call Me By Your Name is that the dad kept going, you guys had a very special friendship or maybe something more, you know, mm-hmm. like, but emphasizing the fact that they were friends. And it was interesting because when I first watched it, like the first time that I saw it, I went like, oh, well, they weren't really friends. Like, they had this mounting tension the whole time. But it's right. true that they were friends. They spent all this time together. Mm-hmm. They had a growing relationship. Whereas, like, we assume so much in relationships between two queer women that they are friends and that it's just this yes. equal, powerless...
When it's clearly not.
Exactly. Like, we just, you know, oh, next thing you know, we were having sex because we were having fun, you know, like...
Also, Carol is a feminine, a very, like, ultra hyper feminine mm-hmm. character. Gloves.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lipstick.
Fur.
Silk. You know, like, fabrics. Other fabrics. But... And I mean, I think part of that is the time of the film. But, like, queer butch women existed then.
Yeah, I know. There's one in the film yeah. that she, like, looks at and then walks away.
And perhaps if she had not presented so feminine, would we have saw her power moves as more icky?
That is also a very... Mia. God.
I know.
Questions. But I don't know. I think in regards to the intergenerational pieces of it, I think... I can think of my own experiences, and, like, I had sex with somebody who was 7 years older than me when I was 18. I said sex with a 25-year-old, and I didn't really care. It didn't really mean anything, and mm-hmm. it didn't really feel like it was that big of a deal. And, like,
right.
whereas, like, I slept with somebody who was only a couple years older than me, but there were a lot of big power imbalances, and it totally fucked me up.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt so uneven. And so I think that is very important, because I think sometimes when we just put these blanket statements down, I think they're really helpful until they're really not.
I agree. But
I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, I think what I'm coming back to is the idea of, oh, is it different for gay people? Like,
yeah.
The thing I find myself saying when we talk about intergenerational relationships, and I, like, particularly ages, like, 16 to 20 with somebody older, and I, if I ever find myself defending it or, like, giving it a note of, oh, it's more complicated than just no, like, no, that's fucked up, I find myself saying regularly, okay, but it's different. You don't understand, it's different for queer people.
Right.
And I don't really know why.
I know. And I want to be,
because it's such a gay male thing. Because is it really that? But it does feel different still.
And I want to be critical of us saying that. But mm-hmm. I also, as someone who regularly dates cis men, mm-hmm. regrettably, my intergenerational relationships have all been with cis men. Mm-hmm. And so I sometimes feel like, oh, no, it's kind of like I'm dating someone my age because, like, he's just immature pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if I shy away from the idea of now currently dating someone, a woman who's much older, because they would require me to have my shit together. And I can't, and I don't.
I think maybe the whole point, and what people talk about as being predatory, is that they don't. Is the idea of, like, what does a 40-year-old see in a young 20-year-old that is so appealing? What mm-hmm. does a 30-year-old see in a 17-year-old that's appealing? Like, why would you be interested in someone who not only doesn't have their shit together, but isn't gonna have their shit together?
And isn't gonna understand your references. No, it's like, just on a different page.
But it's like, why would you want that? And I do think it's interesting, like, I want to be critical of saying, like, oh, it's different with gay people, but I also want to be critical of being critical of saying, oh, it's different with gay people.
Right.
Because things are different, but things are also changing. Like, that is one of the things I think we're going to have to deal with in this era where, like, so many young kids are coming out early. And,
right.
like, so many, and there's, like, and it is, like, with a huge, ginormous asterisk that things are very different in different places and things aren't always mm-hmm. great. But, like, in general, it is getting easier to be a queer high schooler. More and more people are living more publicly gay lives earlier. So it's like, is that same quote-unquote excuse of, oh, well, it's different for gay people, like, is that even going to hold up? Mm. When it's like, actually, there were a couple gay kids that you could have dated who were your age.
Right.
But then also that puts the blame on the adolescent anyways. So, like, that's right. not, just fuck me. I don't know.
Right. I know. It's complicated.
Honestly, I will say this. I feel like this kind of conversation is a lot harder because normally there's, like, a good point to end on. Or, like, when we talk about stuff, like, we're right. like, okay, we figured some stuff out and there's some stuff we have a lot of questions about and, like, things, but things are feeling content. And, like, this doesn't feel, I have a hard time imagining us right. getting to a point where we're like, okay,
we figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, being gay is hard. I mean, that's how I feel anytime I think about Carol.
What, that being gay is hard?
No, I just, like, feel unsettled and yeah. sad. I mean, I think with this, though, I think one thing that we can say is that the experiences of dating and, you know, I think being friends with, I have intimate friendships
mm-hmm.
with a lot of queer people,
mm-hmm.
and I've had friendships with, you know, and I think age is a part of it, but also experience is a part of it too, right? Because age is ultimately an arbitrary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the things that I've learned about myself and the, you know, the kind of support and community that's created in a one-on-one relationship with another person who's has a lot of experience with queerness can be so empowering and so comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we are gonna wrap things up, I do want to acknowledge that some of the, you know, on an individual level, sometimes those power dynamics exist in the way that I think that privileges can assist one another. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? So, like,
that's interesting. That is really interesting. I was actually, and that makes me think, like, I think of myself and in of, like, some of the, like, more power imbalance situations I've been in, and I, like, sexual or romantic power imbalance situations, and, like, there, we talk about, like, what does it cost the younger person to do this? And, like, mm-hmm. and particularly around the idea of, like, are they able to consent to it? Like, what are people able to consent to? And, like, the idea of cost is kind of that, like, you're spending it. And so if someone can't really consent to be doing something, it's really just being taken from them. Like, it's not like, what is this costing right. this person? It's like something is, like, kind of happening to them. But, like, when you're navigating those kind of murky waters of, like, being able to, like, coming of age and, like, being able to, like, consent to first sexual experiences or even, like, later sexual experiences, but still being young, like, with an older person, the idea of it costing something becomes more relevant because they're actually being able to do that. And I think of myself, and I even think of, like, Elio and Call Me By Your Name. And it's, like, at the risk of, like, totally extrapolating a story that's, like, a fictional character, like, I think he would say, like, no, I did, like, yes, it cost me a lot, but, like, he found out so much. Like, it's not, I don't think he ends that movie thinking, like, wow, I wish I'd never done it.
Right.
Like, I think it's totally. Sometimes more, like, yeah, sometimes there can be power imbalances, but sometimes they can actually be useful or helpful or complicated in that sometimes they're painful, but also sometimes you learn a lot that you weren't really going to learn any other way. And it sometimes it sucks that you have to learn those lessons at all, but I don't know.
It's so important to see other queer people, even when the stories you see are tragic, even when the stories you see raise a lot of questions about consent and power and relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we obviously all saw and gave money to Call Me By Your Name, but just by going. And also, if you think about, like, if you take that even into the content of it, like, being somebody like Elio, being the younger queer person who's trying to figure it out and seeing, I mean, it makes me think of, like, being the younger queer person and how important it can be to see older queer people and, like, be so enamored by, like, wow, I finally met somebody who's gay. Like, I have a role model. And, yes. like, and what it means to sleep with that person in particular and what it means for that person to take that opportunity to sleep with you. So that's what I know. Okay, so we are going to play a little game called What Would You Rather? You've all played it, so I'm not going to explain what it is, but we did prepare it specifically for each other. So I wrote What Would You Rather questions for Mia that I'm hoping will be incredibly difficult and painful and test kind of the full limit of her personal values.
I'm very intuitive, so good luck trying. But I'm also a Libra, so I'm very indecisive.
Do you want to start?
Yes. So start answering?
No, you ask me.
You? Okay.
And then, yeah.
So I enlisted help from Nancy, Maggie's girlfriend, for these questions. Okay. So the first one is, would you rather be stuck in an elevator with Thorgy Thor or Lena Dunham?
I'm so upset.
Next question. I'm not answering that. I just...
If you don't divorce. Answer, you have to be trapped in an elevator with both of them.
Cool. I quit. Do this podcast on your own.
Next question. Would you rather not be able to have sushi ever again, or when you order sushi, they get your order really wrong every time?
What the fuck is wrong with you guys? Okay, wait. Okay. How wrong?
Like, completely, totally different thing than you ordered. Like, not good.
So,
not
like, crapshoot? Because, like, I like most sushi. Like, there's, like, would it just be, like, all sushi that I hate?
Yes. Or you can never eat it again.
Okay. I would definitely choose sushi that I hate, even though it would be a waste of money. I wouldn't do it that frequently, and I feel like I would just learn to like things.
You're, like, budgeting your
yes
sushi you hate into your budget.
100%. Okay. I'm going to ask you... a couple questions.
Okay.
Would you rather only be able to eat spaghetti for dinner every single night for the rest of your life and nothing, like you can't eat anything else for dinner?
Yeah.
Or you can't eat bread for 5 years?
Wow, that is tough. Because honestly, both, it's tough in a different way. I feel like most would you rathers are tough because you really don't want to do either, but I kind of would be okay with both.
You would?
Yeah, like I could last 5 years.
5 years with no bread, or like literally for the rest of your life, you cannot eat right. anything but spaghetti for dinner.
I do love spaghetti, though. I know.
I probably
would be able to do that. As a kid, I mostly ate spaghetti for dinner. All right. I do love bread, though. I'm going to say I can handle not eating bread for 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It'll be a tough 5 years.
I feel like you wouldn't go back, though.
To eating bread?
Yeah.
Oh, I would go back with a vengeance. I'd make up for lost time.
Make myself real sick.
Yeah, I'd develop a gluten allergy, probably.
Okay, wait. I'm going to do another one.
Okay.
Would you rather only be able to watch... So the only TV you can watch for the rest of your life is RuPaul's Drag Race reruns. Mm-hmm. Not even new seasons, just reruns. Or you are never allowed to watch any TV ever again with gay people in it.
So I can only watch RuPaul reruns?
So it's like only RuPaul reruns or literally only straight people on TV for the rest of your life.
God. Oh, God. Honestly, maybe straight people? Because RuPaul, I'm so disenchanted is the word I would use.
Yeah.
I'm so disenchanted with RuPaul right now. And also, anytime I watch a straight program, I just slap some gayness onto it in my imagination anyway. So I could just continue doing that.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. That's fair. All right. Next question for you. Would you rather have to live on a Peter Pan bus or lick the floor of a Peter Pan bus station? Maggie's flaring her nostrils.
I'm just feeling really attacked. I just feel like this was very much a two against one.
You asked if it would be personal. You said to make it personal.
I know, but I created yours alone. You enlisted the help of Nancy, who I feel like just took glee in trying to think of the worst situations.
She's okay. A little snitch.
I would probably just lick the floor of the Peter Pan bus station
once. I think that's what I would do, too.
Because living in a Peter Pan bus, that is
right.
Awful.
Right.
Okay. Would you rather have to wear a cupped bra, like an underwire bra, while you sleep for the rest of your life, or have to wear a thong while you sleep for the rest of your life?
Oh, a thong.
What?
Yeah, I would sleep in a thong now. That's right. You heard it here, folks.
Wow.
Well, underwear without cloth covering your butt cheeks. Catch me in it.
Okay, fine. I'm asking you another one then. Would you rather not have any children at all, or you have to have 7 or more?
7 or more.
This is...
Is that an unexpected?
A little bit. I tried to beat the number high enough that it would, like, actually make it interesting. Like, I know if it said 4, you'd be like, oh, I don't care. But
no, I would love to have a huge family, having grown up in one. I just don't want to bring that many humans onto the planet.
Yeah.
So if I could have, like, a 6-kid family without biologically having them, which is a thing that's possible,
mm-hmm.
I would love to have a huge family because it was so fun growing up in one.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that was the end of my questions. And they
I have one more
really
for
easy.
You.
Yeah, hit me.
Would you rather never be able to have a pet or you have to have a snake? As you learned on the last episode of The Bitching Hour, Maggie's greatest fear in life is snakes.
Yeah, and what you didn't hear on the last episode is that my greatest love in life is dogs.
Yes.
So... But you know what? I grew up without pet. I had a hamster, but I mostly grew up without pets. And so I feel like I could survive.
You would make it work?
I would make it work. Who wants a fucking snake?
Honestly, I had a turtle. I had scorpions.
I guess I would have like a little McShit snake. Wait, you had scorpions?
Yeah, my mom didn't know about it for like a year and a half. We kept them in one of my stepbrother's rooms.
I can't.
I'm telling you, the house was wild.
I can't.
I'm trying to have my kids hide a snake. Had to hide a scorpion from me. Oh, should there were two, Columbus and PlayStation 4. PlayStation 2 had just come out, so it was like funny to joke about a PlayStation 4, but now nowadays
there is one, yeah.
PlayStation 4 is old.
Oh my god.
But we thought that they were the same size roughly, but PlayStation 4 was way bigger than Columbus and they had to like battle it out when we first put them in, like, you know, figure out who the alpha was. They're from Petco. And then they became best bros and then one of them died. We don't know why. And then the other one died like 2 days later of heartbreak.
That's sad.
Yeah, they were best. Weird. They were queer.
They were queer.
It was queer scorpions.
Wow. We had a snake. My brother found a snake in like a parking lot, like a little garden snake that like could be a worm. But it was like really gross and brought it home and it lived in our house. But like he lost the snake, which was spooky. And we were all like, okay, well, whatever. I guess it's gone now. And then like a week later, my grandparents were taking care of us. So my parents were out and we saw, like, This was a a split level house. So it was like there were three levels to the house, but they weren't all over each other.
Yeah.
And it had made it from my brother's room up on the third floor down to the basement family room. Yeah. And we like found it on the steps.
Ugh, no.
Fuck snakes.
Yeah, I'm kind of not into snakes just from hearing that story.
My brother-in-law has a snake.
That's what prompted this question.
It's gross. It's gross. She like she slides herself up the glass of her little terrarium all the way up straight. She's like 2 feet long or something fucked up. Terrarium.
What did you say?
Terrarium. What's a terrarium?
Terrarium sounds like an element.
Plutonium. So she like she stretches her little snake body up straight, and you can see like the muscle like getting really tight, and then because she's like trying to get out, and then she falls backwards and like crashes down, and you can like see her muscle like pop. So gross. And everyone's like, oh, it's so funny. I'm like, it's not fucking funny.
Sick fucks.
So cool.
All right. Okay. That was Would You Rather.
So now that we've talked a lot about intergenerational love as it pertains to queer movies, next week we're going to talk about queer movies. Just queer movies, all queer movies, every single queer movie in the history of human film.
I am very excited to talk about bad Netflix gay movies. Like The Babadook.
I don't think is The Babadook on Netflix?
No, and it's also not gay.
I mean,
you've seen that top hat. That's a theater queer. Yeah, so tune in next week when we become film critics.
Yeah.
Or gay critics.
Critics.